The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hey everybody, hope you had a wonderful Christmas if you celebrate Christmas, and if you don't celebrate Christmas, I still hope you had a good time on the 25th of December, because that's Christmas. But not for everybody, but you know what I'm talking about. This week on the show, we have a guest. His name is Lee Romare. It's not a video, but don't worry about it. We'll all be there, and there'll be clips and fun stuff. He was unavailable to join us visually, but I think we all will have a little sticker or something. And then after the interview, we're going to talk about some of our favorite interviews from this year's lineup of shows. And we did a lot of them this year, some big names, and everybody was really good at helping getting us guests. And we're going to continue to do that in 2026. So enjoy our interview and Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year, everybody.
This week on Radio Labyrinth, we're joined by somebody whose work you've definitely seen, even if you didn't realize it. Lee Romare is an Emmy-winning character effects artist and the founder of Romare Studios, a company that's been behind some of the most memorable practical effects, puppetry, and creature builds in modern film and television. From large-scale animatronics to subtle character enhancements, his studio fingerprints are all over projects from major streaming series to blockbuster films. And now his work is front and center in Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein, which we've all watched and enjoyed, that is currently streaming on Netflix. We're excited to talk about how those worlds meet and how his journey led him to one of the most anticipated monster reimaginings in years. Thanks for doing the show. Listen, we all watched the movie. We all enjoyed it quite a bit. And so let's talk about it. Let's talk about how you got to where you are. I watched another interview with you recently where I didn't know this about you, but you kind of got started doing this type of thing, or maybe you had interest at an early age in taxidermy.
Yes, I was like the young Norman Bates of the neighborhood, I guess. I grew up in southern Louisiana in a little town called Morgan City, and I was always fascinated with things that looked realistic. It didn't have to be an animal or a creature. It could be a rock or a fake tree, you know, anything like those things you see at Disneyland. I was interested in monster movies, but the thing that was always surrounding me, being from Louisiana, was taxidermy. People had it on their walls, and you go to someone's house and they would have a deer head, or you go to a restaurant. There was one restaurant that had just named called Harbor Seafood, and it had fish all over the walls. And I would spend most of my time, I'd get up off out of the seat, I'd go stare at the fish, and they had some little frogs that played pool in a case, and you know, I would look at that. So that's kind of where I started. And someone who worked for my dad did taxidermy as a hobby. So he showed me how to mount a crawfish. And I was probably 8 years old, and he had these this mail order course for taxidermy. And he gave me the book, you know, it's like not internet. There was no internet. It was a mail order. You ordered it from the back of a magazine. And, you know, so I got those, and I read and taught myself how to do it. And I guess I did it until I graduated high school and went to college. I was doing work for other people. They would bring me things to mount. So, you know, other people were playing football, and that's what I was doing. So that kind of helped me in my future career.
As far as the taxidermy goes, that, to me, that seems like it would be something that anyone getting into this industry would need to take just to have a nice basis in reality when it comes to making some of these prosthetics.
Yes. Yeah. No, you, yeah, you have to have, you have to learn how to sculpt, and you have to learn realism, learn a little bit about color and painting and things like that. But I would say I got a leg up from, doing that taxidermy, because it really kind of gave me just, you know, my eye started being in the right place. I mean, other people, that got into the business, they learned because they were really fascinated with, the 1980s makeup effects. So a lot of people came from that. I came from a slightly different place. So, I guess I think it gave me an advantage. You know, and there are other people, kids who came along later when there were slasher movies, you know, so they're all into the gore, and I'm not in really into that, but everybody comes from a different place. I mean, I even know people who have fine art backgrounds that, you know, in sculpture that, came into the movie business, because the need was there for them to be there.
When did you realize that what you were doing and what you loved doing, not even, I mean, hobby sounds diminutive and I don't mean it that way, but when did you realize that that was going to be, oh, I could be in the movies?
So, kind of interesting. I graduated high school and I went to LSU for college, and I went into advertising. My parents wanted me to go into business, and I was interested in art. So we kind of, advertising was sort of like a happy medium. And I learned that I could be creative there in college. You know, there was teachers who took interest in me, and that really taught me that I could be creative, and earn money. But you know, I spent a lot of time doing advertising after I graduated college. I spent a year in New York, and I came back to New Orleans, and, because I was too immature really for New York. So, of course I moved to New Orleans, where my immaturity would really, become in full bloom. One day I said, you know, I want to be a special effects makeup artist in Hollywood. I mean, it just came out like that, and everybody was like, what? But, you know, things started falling into place right after that. A couple weeks later, I was in a bookstore, and there was a makeup artist magazine, and I opened it up, and they had a trade show for makeup artists. And so in California, it was like a couple months later, I believe. So I booked a ticket, and I came here. And I went to this trade show, and I met a lot of people. But one gentleman in particular that I met was a gentleman named Dick Smith, who is a legendary makeup artist. He Oscar winner. He did the makeup on Marlon Brando for the Godfather movies. Oh, wow. He did Linda Blair's makeup in The Exorcist. The list goes on and on about those famous 1970s movies. And he was retired at the time, and he was teaching people and mentoring people. And I showed him my, you know, my little bit of work that I had put together. And he said, you know, I think you have some potential. So, you know, call me or write to me when you, you know, back then it was like, you write to me and send me some pictures and I'll write back to you, that kind of thing. So he immediately wrote back and said, okay, you know, let's do it. I'm willing to take you on and show you how to do this. And he has a course. And so I jumped into it, you know, with, I guess, both feet. And I worked really, really hard for 18 months, and I developed the portfolio and developed a skill at sculpting. I quit really all my advertising work, and I started sculpting props, Mardi Gras props, in New Orleans to really get my, you know, sculpting chops going. And I'd work on that during the day, and then I'd work on the makeup stuff at night. And that prepared me to come to Hollywood to begin looking for work.
You get out to Hollywood, you start getting involved in the industry, and then you find yourself on Six Feet Under, and I believe you won an Emmy for that, correct?
Yeah. So I, it took me about a month to get my first job here. And, you know, I sculpted, I worked for really some really great, amazing people in the industry. But, you know, one of my gigs was working for a place called Masters Effects, and they had the Six Feet Under. They had, I think, Stargate was another TV show they had, and there were a couple other ones. There was they had quite a few TV shows that were they were doing, and the head guy, Todd Masters, was out on set, I think, on Stargate, and his second was there too. So I got hired, but essentially I was asked to, you know, I was kind of left to my own devices to do some of the sculpture for that episode, and then of Six Feet Under, and a couple other episodes, and then they came back and they, you know, took it to set and applied and everything like that. So I was part of that team that won the Emmy on 6 Feet Under, which was, you know, it was great. It was exciting. I would say it doesn't, you know, when you win an Emmy, I mean, I think that was the first year that they actually acknowledged the sculptors of prosthetics, or maybe the second year. Typically they just would, acknowledge the makeup artists. But that year they acknowledged the sculptors. I was able to get on that ticket, and I would say it doesn't really help you get more work here. And it helps at home, you know, because all of a sudden, you know, oh, you know, he wasn't so crazy after all.
More for validation than for profit, actually.
Exactly. But, you know, it does help. It does help you, like, in non-entertainment industry, you know, endeavors. Let's say that. So anyway, yeah. So that was that. And that was a long time ago.
Frankenstein has a limited theater run, does well, and then it goes to Netflix, and it's an amazing, beautiful film. I had people telling me, oh, you're not going to like it. And then I had other people telling me, you're going to love it. And so I just decided to make my own decision. And I watched the movie and I absolutely loved it. I now hold it in regard as much as the original Universal film. I think it's right there with it as far, I mean, it's a completely different story and it's a different time and all of that, but just as far as Frankenstein type movies go. So can you tell us how Guillermo got in touch with you, or how you got the job and what you brought to it?
Sure. So I, you know, touching back on the animals, I guess I'm the dead animal guy of Hollywood. So my friend Mike Hill, who's an amazing creature designer, sculptor, he actually designed the creature for Guillermo. They're colleagues and they're friends. And he actually worked with Guillermo on The Shape of Water, that creature. So, you know, he was asked to do all that, but he was also asked to do a myriad of other effects, you know, body parts and animals, dead animals and this and that, and bodies. And, it, you know, he couldn't do it all. He's not set up to do that. I mean, I have a studio with people. I can carry a job like that, but he is more of an independent. He asked me to do the animals, and I'm like, of course I want to do it. It's, you know, it's Guillermo, and it's going to be a beautiful film. And, you know, it's going to make, you know, me look good in this film because they care so much. And so we got that job, and it's, you know, it was essentially, we had to make a dead sheep, and we had to make the dead sled dogs that get killed. And some of them have to be kind of gruesome. So, you know, I'm not used to doing like gruesome, gory stuff. So I was like, oh, what do you guys want for this? And Guillermo just drew a little, you know, on one of the dogs, he drew a little head with smashed in head. He's like, do this, you know? So I got that drawing and I'm like, okay, let's just copy what Guillermo wants. So, so that was it. The challenge was, for that one was, you know, these are period animals. So we had to, you know, we worked closely with production to get the right animals, you know, the look of the animals. And they had, reached out to animal trainers and like done research and everything like that. So they made my job pretty easy as far as that goes. You know, they had done most of the legwork. So we just kind of took what they had and ran with it.
Well, you guys did a great job.
Yeah, it really was a beautiful movie.
Thank you. Yeah. Yes. Well, amazing team, for sure.
The one thing I was curious about from your list of work was the dictator.
Okay.
What animal? What was the animal in the dictator? The camels?
We did this animatronic goat that that chews, and I don't even know if it ended up in the movie. I don't see all the movies that I work on. So it's a little animatronic goat that chews through. I guess he's like going across a tightrope. Yeah. And the little goat is chewing through the line. And I guess they didn't have confidence in the real goat to be able to pull it off. So they had that backup, mechanical goat to do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who did you work with most on The Dictator, Sasha or Larry Charles?
Neither. That's for somebody like me, that doesn't require their input, really. I mean, if it was more of a makeup, they would be more involved. But this was just sort of get an animatronic goat that matches that. So that'll be more like dealing with the production designer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On something like that. Yeah.
As opposed to Five Nights at Freddy's, where you designed all of the bringing the animatronic stuff to life, that was more self-encompassing with the director and everything.
So that is that's interesting in that it was that those were not for the movie. Those were for a YouTube star. His name is Sox, and he has a YouTube channel, Sox for One. He's a gamer. So he called me up and said, I want to recreate the entire Freddy's restaurant, and I want to create the characters, and we're going to play this in real life. So, okay. We had 8 weeks to do six characters with the animatronic heads moving, just like in the movie. And he wanted his video to coincide with the opening of the movie. So it was me, my team was working on that stuff, and we had about 8 weeks, and my friends were working on the actual movie stuff, and they had months to do it. So it came out at the same time, and they always laugh about it because, I'm like, I promise you that more people have seen our work on the YouTube. I mean, cause this guy's like, that video I think has now almost 50 million views. So, I always laugh. I'm like, we got a lot more attention than you guys did. the gamer community all loved it. It was fun to do, and it's something very different for us, but it was just fun to do like in a really fast way, to get all these characters done.
Did you guys compare as far as who did what better, even though they had more time?
Sure, I think we did better, but that's fine.
I love the fact that you worked on the Country Bears and Abe Lincoln.
Yes, so I actually worked on the Country Bear movie first at Jim Henson Creature Shop. I sculpted a couple of the characters, and then I got to, when I started my own company, one of the assignments was to, I'll just say real quick, I got to redo the Country Bears, the look of the Country Bears. They were refurbishing the attraction. So I was able to actually go in there and help, redesign the look and actually get on that stage with those things. And those were the characters that I loved as a kid. I actually had the little album that you buy from Disneyland, and I would listen to that all the time. So that was a huge moment for me. What led to that was resculpting Abe Lincoln. So when I started my studio in 2000, I think I had an actual location at 2004. I started at 2000, but I was doing movies and TV and anything I could get my hands on, short films. And my friend worked at Imagineering, and they were working on the first electric actuation of a animatronic. So what that means is most of the animatronic figures or mechanical figures you see in the parks were pneumatic, which is air, driven by air, or hydraulic, which is driven by oil. And but that Disney felt that electric was the future. So they started putting a lot of energy into that. And, you know, the first things they were doing were hands and heads, like really small stuff. And the first head, you know, we did several different characters iterations, but the project came up at Disneyland to redo the Abraham Lincoln show. And Abraham Lincoln is the first audio animatronic that Walt Disney ever created. He was personally involved. He loved that project. So, and you know, also convinced them to let us do the full figure finish, the hair, the hands, the paint, the everything. So the theme park work is much different than the movie work, and that the, you know, the, what we create for theme parks has to last 20 years and have a 95% reliability. Whereas in movies, you just have to, it has to work for the shot. So, that entailed me not only having, you know, all these artists that work in the movies, and but also a full engineering team. So I developed that over the last, you know, 10 years to do this kind of really complicated, really, you know, I had to create an engineering team to
just to make it happen.
Well, it has to be structurally sound. That's what I'm trying to say. Mechanically sound, and it has to last. So,
yeah.
Frankenstein is currently streaming on Netflix. Like I said earlier, it's been nominated for some Golden Globes. I'm anticipating that when the Academy Awards come out, or the announcements, that it'll find some nominations too. Because as far as being visual or a visual film on a grand scale, I think this blew everything from 2025 right out of the water. And
yeah,
we're curious what you're working on next, if you can tell us.
Well, we just finished. I don't know if you've heard of Epic Universe in Orlando. It's like the newest theme park.
Oh yeah,
the Universal's created. Yeah, it's huge, and it's the first theme park in 25 years that they built in Florida. So it's got a Harry Potter land. It's got monsters, Universal Monsters. It's got How to Train Your Dragon. It's got Nintendo. So the next things we're going to be working on, and we created some of the most sophisticated figures and that are in the park. I can't really go into detail about which ones, but I think our next work is going to be something along the similar lines, I would say. We do a lot of research and development for live entertainment and theme parks and also the production work. So I think it's going to be along that line. Those Disney and Universal are kind of sort of in a competition war a little bit right now. So, you know, both of them are ramping up production, so that we're going to be doing a lot of work with in that realm.
That's awesome.
That'll looking keep you busy.
Looking at some pictures of it. It looks amazing. Well, Lee, thank you for taking the time to talk to us. We'd love to have you back sometime. And everyone go watch Frankenstein if you haven't seen it.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Hey, Radio Labyrinth is also brought to you by the Punchline Comedy Club in Sandy Springs, Georgia. Tucked inside the legendary Landmark Diner, the Punchline remains Atlanta's longest-running premier comedy nightclub, where you can get a huge slab of cake, pancakes, or even a hamburger to satisfy any cravings you have while you're laughing. Make sure you tip your waitresses, please, and waiters. Or just servers. Why don't we just say that, Tim? It's 2025. This weekend at the Punchline, you have Sienna Hubert Ross, the 26th to the 28th of December, Maddie Smith, and, of course, the great big New Year's Eve live comedy show on New Year's Eve. In January, you got Will Burkhart from January 2nd to the 3rd, Troy Bond the 9th through the 11th, and January 15th through the 17th, comedian Greg Fitzsimmons. Returning in January, devoted listeners, Patreon members, keep an eye out for that weekly post offering you a chance to win a pair of passes to an upcoming show. Go to punchline.com and check out all the shows. Hey, thanks again to our guest, Lee. We got to have him back on sometime when we have a better connection with him, because, I mean, he has quite a career, and I was really fascinated by how he got into everything with, you know, starting out being interested in, what is it, taxidermy. And he does mention it. You either go down the Norman Bates road with that, or, you know, you turn it into something that's not just a hobby, but it's a career. And everybody go watch Frankenstein, man. If you haven't seen it, it's a good movie. So let's talk about, since we had a guest, let's talk about our top guests of Radio Labyrinth in 2025. But let's first talk about the co-host that we have, Lizzie, who joined us. When did you join us?
Was it May or June, I think?
Late spring, yeah.
It was May because it was before my birthday.
All right. So you joined us.
Because I remember Jeff sending me a text that said, is it your birthday, Lizzie? And I have no idea how he knew.
Facebook? No, you weren't on Facebook.
So uh-uh. Well, Gus Jones was, but and I am back on Facebook now. Yes. So that's one thing y'all got out of me is now I'm
got you back on Facebook.
Yeah.
Well, we're happy that you came on board and we love having you on the show and it's been a good year. And so you're going to stick with us through season 11, I hope.
Yes, I love. Yeah, I love being here. It's one of the highlights of my week.
So. Yay.
I love it. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for joining us, Irvin. Radio Labyrinth has sponsors. In fact, we have two delightful sponsors I'd like to tell you about right now. The first one being our longest sponsor, Atlanta Pizza in Euro in Conyers, proudly serving the East Metro Atlanta area for over 40 years. Atlanta Pizza in Euro is the place to be, proudly serving you the best pizza and euros in the city. They're the place to be this fall. They have a huge selection of local Georgia and Southeast craft beers on tap, as well as many others available in bottles and cans. Their featured selection for fall is Scofflaw Brewing's Oktoberfest. Come out and enjoy a tasty ice-cold brew and some fantastic food made fresh to order. And I can attest to that. Their food is amazing. I'm talking about some of the best gyros, pizzas, hot subs, and Greek and Italian specialties around. Stop by Monday through Friday from 11 to 9 p.m. and Saturdays from noon to 9 p.m. And they are closed on Sundays. Tuesday nights, they have team trivia, and that's always fun, from 7 to 8:30 p.m. Their food truck is also available. So if you're interested, call Mike at 770-483-6228 for more details or to schedule your private or corporate event. And Mike says, thanks for listening to the best podcast around. Thank you, Mike, and for all your business and continued support. We're also brought to you by LDI Repro Printing. Do you have a commercial or residential construction printing need? Sure, we all do. Well, what are you waiting for? Contact LDI Repro Printing of Athens. They've been in Athens, Georgia since 2005, which, if you're like me and good at math, is 20 years. With fast turnaround and affordable prices, call 706-316-9366, or you can email them at athens@ldiline.com. Our top guests from 2025. My favorite, and you know, I love all of them, but my favorite, and I was excited about this for a long time, was Frank Santopadre, the Emmy-winning producer and longtime creative force behind Gilbert Gottfried's amazing Colossal podcast. He came on to talk about his podcast, which he started this year, called Fun for All Ages, which has ended up being a fun show that I like very much.
Yeah.
Still have that feel of... Go ahead, Dustin.
No, I was going to say what you were going to say. It does have the feel of the Amazing Colossal podcast.
Especially with the Gilbot.
The Gilbot really pushes that forward.
Yeah.
But yeah, just being able to hear old Hollywood stories and feel like that you still have an access to that world is fun to listen to every week.
Yes. And especially since it's, you know, boomer. Really, it is really boomer stuff, but we grew up with the boomer stuff if you're Gen X and older millennials. So, you know, somebody needs to do something like that for, you know, the late 80s, the mid to late 80s and 90s. We could do that.
Maybe. We could do that.
We'd have to constantly be researching, though, because no one is going to be as quick and researched as Frank is.
Oh, no.
We had Ronnie Neely and Matt Malero on. Matt Malero, one half of the creative force behind Aqua Teen Hunger Force, and co-host of the Meat Kingdom show on YouTube, which is fun to watch. And I believe this week they have, I can't say his name, Nick Igniknock. You know who I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. I hope I said it right. He's not watching. But anyway, if he is, I'm sorry if I mispronounce it. And Ronnie Neely, Ronnie not Roby, is known for the Dancing is Forbidden podcast. That was a fun episode, and I really enjoyed it. We talked about Adult Swim history, animation, and some of his upcoming projects. Dan Pasternak joined us. He is a producer, a comedy historian. I think he worked at The Tonight Show. He's done so much. And he's a collector with deep ties to classic comedy. And he told us the story about getting on the Dr. Demento show. He was talking about the Airplane Live tour, the John Candy documentary, I Like Me. He was a part of that with Ryan Reynolds. And we did talk a little bit about the Stand By Me tour and his huge comedy album archive. So any thoughts about that one, you guys?
I just said that was a good one.
Oh, yeah. He was such a fun guest. I loved talking to him. He was just easy to talk to. He was fun. He's chosen such a fun path in life. Mm-hmm. I thought he was the tits.
Yeah. Hopefully he got a bra from our next guest.
Well, that's what I was going to say. They come head to head, Ron Shear and him with me.
And like Frank, he's such a fount of knowledge.
Yeah.
It's crazy how much, you know, that he knows and how much is just common knowledge to him that we aren't even privy to.
That he remembers and he pulls out of his brain.
Yeah.
Like sometimes I can't even remember words.
Yeah, I can't. No, I got to Google them. We also spoke with Rhonda Shear, who brought Up All Night back to YouTube. And you can watch episodes of that. I believe she has a Christmas episode that dropped before Christmas. And you can check that out. We spoke with Valen Hall again. She returned to the show to talk about the final season of Righteous Gemstones. And we spoke to Brown Lawler.
Brown.
With Brown here on the page.
Browning.
Yeah, I don't know who Brown Lawler is. I guess that's what Dustin leaves in the bathroom.
Yeah.
He was a really sweet guest too, by the way. Browning. Yeah.
He was. And they were just on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. Oh, you guys are great. we had Frank Nicotero and Josh Warren. Nicotero is a comedian. He's very, very funny. This it did not do the numbers, but it's a good episode because he is cool. He's quick. He's smart. He's got that Pittsburgh attitude, and he's very knowledgeable about game shows. And Josh was great too. He was a contestant on Frank's cousin's show, Guts and Glory, which was on AMC Plus and Shudder. So
they need to run that on the regular AMC so more people can watch it.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, it was a fun show. And anytime we have Josh Warren on the show is a good show for me. I love him. Yeah. I love having him on.
Yeah, he's
a good guy. He's just like a friend of the show.
We spoke with comedian Alex Falcone, who we ended up going to see at the Punchline altogether. And that was great. He was very funny, but he was such a great guest and so generous with his time. What?
That's another one of my favorites.
Alex.
You were like, he wasn't generous with his
time. I'm saying it's another one of my favorites. Like, I'm like, oh, that was my favorite. And it's like, no, that one was. No, that one.
I constantly catch myself just watching his feed now.
Me too. Yeah. Just keep going. We had Casper Kelly, who is Adult Swim fame. He's a writer, director. He did Too Many Cooks, Yule Log. And we talked to him about his contribution to the found footage film VHS Halloween. And that was also a good interview. And then probably our biggest episode of the year, Matt Dinneman, author, and Jeff Hayes, narrator, talented, very talented voice guy, from Dungeon Crawler, Carl. We talked about the phenomenon of the books and the audio books, lit RPG. And if you didn't get a chance to see that one, please go back and watch it because it's or listen to it. It's a lot of fun. And again, Dinneman was a great guest. And Jeff, we've had on now twice.
Yeah, we had Jeff on just by himself, and he was great by himself. But when the two of them are on together, they play off each other so well.
Yeah, you can tell they've done a lot of panels and stuff like that together. But Matt just announced today, or he put on his Patreon that he finally met face to face with McFarlane in LA this
week. Oh, really?
So yeah, the ball's rolling on that.
Oh man, that's awesome news.
I also walked into Books a Million yesterday, and they are Books a Million book of the year.
Nice.
The first book. Yeah.
It's really the best audiobook that I've listened to since I first listened to anything that Frank Muller did.
Yeah, agreed.
It's a completely different universe, and it's different. It's a different style, but something that you don't want to stop listening to. So that ended up being our biggest episode of the year, over 2,700 views. A Dungeon Crawler Carl interview with Matt Denneman and Jeff Hayes. So they should come back every week.
Yeah. We'll get them back on again.
Yes. Hopefully. And then. Hey, before we go, I want to remind you that you can become a Radio Labyrinth Patreon member. How about that? Radio Labyrinth listeners, you radios, you can support us for the low, low cost of $5 a month. Only $5 a month. That's it. That's the only tier moving forward. You can keep it where it was before or lower it to $5, whatever you want to do. And this is aside from the executive producers. If you're paying more and want to reduce it, go ahead. Tariffs are hitting us hard.
No, they're not. I mean, they're beautiful. The economy's great.
And for anyone on the fence or looking to support us, make sure you add your address to the Patreon profile so we can get it and mail you a thank you letter and our latest sticker, which all went out last week. And for the executive producers, we'd love to have you join us as guests on Radios in the Dark. So far, we've had Mike Hall from Atlanta Pizza in Euro and another special guest coming up soon. But it's your show, and you help us keep it going with your generous donations, and we'd love to have you join us for the live Patreon show, Radios in the Dark. For $25 a month, you become a producer, an executive producer, that's your title, and you'll get a sticker, a shirt of your choice from our merch store, and a weekly shout-out on the show, plus the aforementioned opportunity to sit in with us while we record the live Patreon show. So without any further ado, let's thank our most recent additions to the producer column. Pat Squatch Talk Turner, and I will give you a plug for your podcast, Squatch Talk, Pat Turner, Scott Augustine. We also have Mike Walker, John Allen, Matt Carter, Chris Chandler, Mike D, Jim Fortner, Terry Fuller, Roby Neely, Jeff Peterson, Tim Slayton, and Brian and DJ Chelsea Smith. So thank you guys very much for supporting us. So thank you to all of our guests. We're going to have more guests next year. Thank you to all of you. When we return in 2026 for season 11, can you fucking believe that? We'll be back to doing the live shows afterwards. More interviews, and of course we'll be back to partnering with the Punchline and giving away tickets each and every week. Thank you to Jamie for Jamie Bendel from the Punchline for agreeing to help sponsor us, and thank you to Brett Perkins from LDI Repro Printing in Athens, and of course, as always, thank you to Mike Hall from Atlanta Pizza in Euro. Hopefully we can get his truck out. We'll do a little movie thing someplace someday, maybe in my backyard. But I don't want any people come. No, I'm kidding. We'll find a place. Happy New Year, everybody. And we'll talk to you in 2026. Until that time, please remember to
keep it canon.
What do you say? All good things come to an end.
What's that got to do with this show?
Lost in the radio.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.